From KCRW in Santa Barbara, I'm Jonathan Bastian, and this is the 805, Stories from the Central Coast. 7 years later, Santa Barbara is finally out of a drought. And now that the city has lifted water restrictions, residents may be firing up their sprinklers again this summer. But is this a good thing for the long run? Then, senior food editor at the Santa Barbara Independent, Matt Kedman, talks about his night at a $550 a plate experience at Montecito's Silverbow restaurant. But first, the always contentious debate about housing in Santa Barbara continues. Last week, residents and activists packed council chambers to fight for more tenants' rights, especially when it comes to evictions. And considering that two-thirds of Santa Barbarans are renters and the cost of housing is soaring, this is a big deal. Here are a few of the voices from the meeting.
We have been repeating over and over again how Just Cause and tenant protections are vital for this city to be healthy.
I have family members and Latino friends who constantly struggle to find and keep affordable housing here because they face absurdly high rents, unfair evictions, and sometimes deplorable living conditions.
Please put people over profit, and especially local people over profit.
In the end, council advanced one ordinance that requires landlords to require year-long leases to tenants. The other, which is being drafted, is something called a Just Cause Eviction Ordinance. This basically means that a tenant can only be evicted if they fail to pay rent or violate the terms of their lease. So it's an added set of protections. And the city council hopes it would give renters the peace of mind that they won't suddenly be kicked out of their place if the landlord unexpectedly raises rent or just wants to empty the unit. And while renters might see this as a victory, not everyone is happy about it, especially some landlords. For that, we go to Michelle Robertson. She works in property management and is a board member for the Santa Barbara Rental Property Association. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Let's just kind of go through this piece by piece. Council is enacting this one-year lease for renters in Santa Barbara. I know this is something that kind of you've been thinking about, and tell us why you think maybe this is not a good path forward for the city.
Well, I mean, the one-year written lease is super important. I think everybody should be in a written contract and know what their rights and responsibilities are under that contract. I also think that tenants should be as informed as landlords as to what their rights are and be educated in that respect. They should know that if they're on a term lease, they can't just be given a notice to move out for no reason. The task force that was put together 2 years ago, they had a subcommittee regarding Just Cause. And the one-year written lease requirement was part of it, but the annual requirement that the landlord offer that written lease year after year was a compromise to Just Cause. Because the thought was that if somebody's on a lease, they already have Just Cause protections.
Right.
And after that lease is over in a year and they get offered another year, then they continue to have those Just Cause protections.
Right. I mean, the idea, again, being here that, you're protected by the lease, essentially, the language in the lease, right?
Correct. You're absolutely protected and you're secure that at least you're going to be in your home for another year, in your community, your kid's not going to be disrupted from school. And those things are important for people to feel secure in their own housing. I myself went to four different high schools growing up in LA and being displaced a few times. So I agree with the one-year written lease requirement. What I'm very confused about is the second part that the city council just kind of threw out is that they think that we also need Just Cause, which when for 2 years we were talking about this being a compromise, I don't know how we need both.
Right. But, at the same time, some would say we do have an eviction problem here in Santa Barbara. For example, the Santa Barbara Rental Housing Mediation Program says there could be up to 200 cases of no-cause evictions per year. And therefore, maybe renters really do need these added protections of a just-cause eviction ordinance. So how would you respond to that?
That a lot of owners, unfortunately, do have to take back their properties. They have to either move back into them because they left town and want to move back in and they had it as a renter. And a Just Cause protection really doesn't protect against that kind of displacement. I mean, we have the Ellis Act and we have protections against people that want to get their property back. And I've heard it from two people at the city council. I know that our new city council member, Megan Harmon, it comes close to her because her husband's parents were displaced in San Francisco. as a take back, and it turned out that they lied about it. So they had some protections, which was great. And those are horrible stories. Nobody likes to go through that. But then you get into constitutional rights issues that the property owner has.
And I wonder if that's kind of at the heart of this debate, which is that you represent a lot of property owners, and perhaps they feel that their rights as property owners are being stripped away?
Yes, I think that a big part of it is that us as property providers, when somebody does something that, you know, violates the lease or they don't pay their rent on time, we try to have an amiable relationship about it. We'll call them first and say, hey, we didn't get your rent this month. What's going on? And sometimes they'll have a good excuse. Their bank account got broken into or, you know, whatever it is. And we don't just post three-day notices. When you have just cause and you have a tenant that you're wondering, are they just giving me excuses, blowing hot air, or is this going to rectify in the future, you can't let it slide anymore. You're going to say, you know what, I don't want to take that risk. I'd rather do a three-day right now, get them out of my property, and evict them. When you have just cause, when's the next opportunity? So the people that we're really trying to protect are the people that are going to be impacted the most by having evictions on their record.
Now, at the same time, I think the Santa Barbara City Council thinks that we're kind of in this moment of an affordable housing crisis. For example, they use statistics that say a one-bedroom costs about $2,200. Therefore, you need to make about $90,000 a year to afford that. On top of that, two-thirds of Santa Barbarans are renters. So, you know, these ordinances are maybe designed to just try and level the playing field in a market that seems totally out of balance.
And I agree, it is out of balance. I disagree with the numbers that have been published by the city of Santa Barbara. And I voiced my opinion with Deidre Randolph last year because I asked her, I'm like, how do you get these numbers? And the response was, well, I looked in the news press every weekend in April and I looked in the Independent. I'm like, and then a couple of times on Craigslist. And I was like, you know, we have Zillow, we have Trulia, we have so many different avenues to rent. And if you're looking at the same rental over and over, that's out of the mark because it's overpriced, that's really bad data. And it's doing a disservice to the community because a rental owner will say, why am I not getting those rates? Maybe it is time to raise my rates if there's a big disparity. Because what I'm seeing is one bedrooms at $1,600, $1,700 being the norm. Unless it's, you know, really upgraded in a specialty part of town. So I have a problem with that. I do agree we have a housing crisis, and I don't see the city doing enough to actually try to have workforce housing, actually see what solutions we have to build more housing for our workforce. Otherwise, we're going to run out of housing.
And, I mean, there were some criticisms with this of these ordinances as well that actually none of this does maybe what people essentially want, which is to somehow control rental prices. I mean, even with these protections that go into place, conceivably a landlord could still finish a lease and raise rents by 50%, right?
That's correct. And so when these just cause provisions come into play, people are not asking for just cause. That's just the gateway. They're asking for rent control. And so right now, the advocacy, I didn't hear a single true story of somebody that was displaced for no reason at all at any of the city council meetings these past several months. I've heard anecdotes that said somebody, and I heard later that those were untrue. But this is really just the stepping stone to get rent control. And if we're talking rent control, we should talk rent control so people understand that this isn't about just cause and people being protected in their home. This is about people wanting rent control.
Michelle Robertson is a board member for the Santa Barbara Rental Property Association, co-chairs Government Relations Committee. Thanks for spending some time with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Now let's turn to someone who supported and voted to advance these ordinances. Councilwoman Kristen Sneddon represents Santa Barbara's District 4 and joins me now. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Just want to start going through some of the things that Michelle mentioned in the interview, starting with this question of one-year leases. You know, she says that when you sign a lease, you're protected by the lease. That's enough. You have protections in place. So what is the point of tacking on this idea of just cause evictions on top of that?
Well, a lease does provide you certain protections as they're written up by the landlord or by the property owner. And a just cause ordinance, or what we're trying to call maybe a no cause ordinance for eviction, just helps to enumerate what are those reasons why a person could be evicted. It in some ways protects the property owner as well to have recourse for if a tenant is not paying rent or is a nuisance or is having illegal activity on the property. So it helps to just have from the city perspective, this is what we honor as reasons for eviction.
Right. I mean, on top of that, there were questions surrounding the amount of people that actually do get evicted without cause. I mean, we've maybe seen numbers. It could be 200 a year. It's unknown exactly. So, I mean, are we talking about a problem that we have no sense of the scale or if it's even a major problem in the city?
It's a really good question. And we don't have actual data at this point, but this is one way we could get that type of data. If we had a no cause type of ordinance in place and then say we had mediation as an intermediate step for having to carry out an eviction, then we could start collecting those numbers. How many of these are eviction for cause and how many are eviction for other reasons? We don't have strong numbers right now, but we do have agencies and organizations that protect tenants' rights, and they're very clear on how many people they work with and work for, and that this is a problem, that we're having a lot of people who are renters leaving our community. They get evicted, they can't find another place to live with either even paying more rent or they've offered to pay more rent, and they end up leaving our community because of that reason.
One concern that came out of this, even though this Just Cause ordinance is one that's developing, is that it's just stripping more and more rights away from property owners. And I feel like in the media, sometimes property owners get kind of this bad rap in Santa Barbara. Mm-hmm. But in fairness, there can be complex situations that arise. I mean, let's say you're a landlord and you have a family member that's ill and they want to move in with you and the only space is in the rental unit and mm-hmm. you want to bring them into your house, into the rental. But the fear is with something like a Just Cause ordinance that the landlord has no say over the buildings that they own. Mm-hmm. So how would you respond to something like that?
It's a valid concern, and I think that's where we need to be really careful when we start listing out what the reasons are that we can have evictions. We can, if we take it from a city perspective, we can have that be a reason that would be acceptable mm-hmm. reason for eviction, that a family member will be moving in or is ill. And we can work with that. And that's when I would like to invite the Realtors Associations. I'll continue to meet with them and work with them to see, well, within this framework, what would be acceptable?
And, you know, another aspect of this is that, okay, it's great to support renters. It is great to give them rights. We know some 2/3 of Santa Barbarans are renters. But, I mean, the larger question here is affordability. It's lack of housing, and you know, and again, while it's nice to have things like Just Cause ordinances, you could also say this doesn't actually get to the underlying cause of the problem, which is again, lack mm-hmm. of housing in the city.
Yes, lack of housing and lack of housing that's affordable. So one thing that we're considering at council coming up is inclusionary housing. So if a large development is built, what percentage of those units would need to be offered at an affordable rate, which I think will start to address some of that affordability. For myself personally, I am not, I'm concerned about the rate of development in Santa Barbara, that we're going a little bit too big, too fast. And I know I'm alone in that's my view. And the way I've sort of reconciled that is, if I don't want to be building a whole bunch of residences that may or may not be affordable, then I can work toward tenant protections in the way that maybe slow down those evictions, maybe make it so that somebody can stay in their apartment or their rental longer, so that it's just slowing down that turnaround and slowing down that rate that rents are going up. It's still, there's nothing in this ordinance, proposed or otherwise, that does anything to control the price of rents, and nor are we proposing to. That's not anywhere in this discussion. This is just about slowing down the rate of eviction so that a family has time to plan ahead a year at a time, that if they're paying their rent, they're not a nuisance, they're following all the rules, that they could be given enough notice to be able to make other plans.
Okay, so when someone like Michelle says, you know, she thinks when you hear Just Cause ordinance, that pretty much means we're on a road to rent control in Santa Barbara. Would you debunk that and say that's not true?
I would debunk that. I mean, I hear that a lot, and I understand that people link the two together. If you have rent control, you do need to have just cause.
Right.
But having just cause doesn't mean that you have rent control. And I think we're a ways off from even discussing rent control, if we ever will. There are a lot of different avenues we could take with that. I think right now the council is just thinking inclusionary, that percentage of new units be offered at an affordable rate will do a lot to increase our workforce housing stock in the city. So it's not even in discussion at this point. So the just cause is really was an extension of the discussions on mass evictions. So we had this two-prong approach. One was approaching the mandatory leases, sure. And the other was how to handle mass evictions. And we're really just looking at it as it comes in the ordinance. None of us know what's in that draft ordinance at this point. But it does not necessarily lead to rent control. And as far as I've heard anywhere on the discussions I've been having, it's not been part of the conversation. I mean, just cause is a really big change. It would be a really big change if it does pass. And I think that's something to look at. And then we can look at numbers. We can get the data from that and see what happens from there. But it's not on the table at all, rent control.
Councilwoman Kristen Sneddon of Santa Barbara, once again, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
This is the 805 on KCRW. I'm Jonathan Bastian. Well, if you've listened to this show before or have just been following the news, you know it's been years of dire and exhausting warnings about conserving water. Now, 7 years later, some actual good news. Santa Barbara is officially out of a drought. And with that, council agreed to lift water restrictions, which means that you can finally water that lawn or wash that car in the middle of the day. But anyone who has lived in this region knows that another drought could be around the corner. So, should we suddenly go gangbusters with our water use? To learn more, I'm joined by Joshua Hagmark, the City Water Resources Manager. Hey, Joshua.
Thanks for having me.
Give us a sense of the numbers here. I mean, we just learned that we are officially out of a drought, first time in 7 years. How much water did we get, and how secure are we now in Santa Barbara?
Yeah, as long as I've been in this position, unfortunately, we've been in a drought. So we are definitely in a much better position. Kachuma is 80% of capacity now. Obviously not full, which we'd like to see, but certainly having been down to 7% of capacity in a much better place, where we now think we have at least 2 years, or 3 years actually, of water for this community. So we're really, really excited. Gibraltar, which is owned by the city, is also full. It's a very small reservoir at this point, but really optimistic going forward.
You know, now that we've lifted the restrictions, it means that folks can go back to doing things they haven't done in a long time, maybe watering their lawns, using more water than they did before, maybe taking longer showers. I mean, there's been this push to really conserve. Are you worried right now that we could just pull the lid off and people are going to start using more water than maybe they've grown accustomed to?
Well, we had a healthy conversation with City Council when we talked about this, and you know, I've seen what this community can do, so I can't say that I'm worried that they're going to go back to their normal ways. I think people have made a lot of permanent changes, lifestyle changes, and I think have gotten comfortable with where we are with their water usage, and I really hope we don't bounce back up. I think we're in a good, safe place right now where we're using water that I think is, we're using it in a cost-effective, beneficial manner, and so I'm excited. I'm excited with what the community's been doing, and I think they're going to continue to do that. And I think the council was hopeful that they would continue. I mean, a lot of the stuff that we had, restrictions we had, were just good practices, like not watering in the middle of the day when evaporation is really high, not you know, washing your car off and having the water run into the street. I mean, just things that really just made sense. And so, yes, it's now no longer a regulatory requirement, but it's still a good practice.
Was there thought of saying, let's keep the restrictions in place? Why not? I mean, you know, it's been 7 years, and as I mentioned before, who knows? It may not rain for 10 more years.
I think that we heard that loud and cleared from the council. There was a little disagreement on that, and it was a healthy discussion on it. And, of course, it is wanting, you know, government to enforce when it needs to and then get out of the way when it's not necessary. And so there was a good, healthy dialogue back and forth. And I think at the end of the day, we've got a community that's already in tune with water in this community. And I think we're going to continue to message it, how important it is. But I don't think we really needed regulations at this point.
Meanwhile, there was a lot of excitement and also a lot of questions surrounding Santa Barbara's desalination plant. And I know a lot of folks are also wondering, okay, we've got a lot more water now. Do we continue to run this thing? It's a facility that uses a tremendous amount of energy on the city's grid. What's the plan for the desal plant moving forward?
Well, I think that's the important part of where we are right now. So we are in a water supply condition. So we've dropped from an emergency down to what we consider kind of a cursory warning. And one of the things is we do have groundwater basins that are historic low levels. We have experiencing seawater intrusion into our groundwater basins. And so we need to rest those basins. And this is a great opportunity to do so. To get there, having desal is really helpful because we can really shut those groundwater production off and let it sit, hopefully, for the next 2 to 3 years, which would be fantastic. Last drought, when the groundwater basins were pumped this hard, it took almost 10 years for those groundwater basins to recover. So we're going to be monitoring them, but desal is going to be really helpful in allowing us to really not turn them on at all. The other thing that the city is facing as well is during the drought, we borrowed water to help meet our needs, and we had that water imported through the state water system. It was really important. We now have water debt, which is, you know, similar to having debt on your credit card. We have to pay that water debt down, and we have about 10 years to pay it down. And so we're eager to get that off the books in case this drought comes roaring back. We have about a 30% of the an annual supply that we have to pay back. And so desal, again, is going to be helpful at allowing us to take our state water allocation and pay down that water debt. So those are some issues that are still lingering from a 7-year drought. So as much as our surface water has, you know, come back up and it's in a better position, we still have those lingering issues that are out there.
Well, lastly, the most important question here. Some people have been saying that the Santa Barbara water has been tasting better. Maybe as a result of this desal plant. Can you confirm that, Joshua Hagmark?
I'm a biased. I do think that we have some of the best water here on the South Coast, and you know, a combination of, you know, improvements that we've made at the Cater Water Treatment Plant using ozonation. I think that has made a huge difference in how the water tastes, and of course, desal is exceptionally good tasting water, and so I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad to hear that that's coming across. But of course, you know, I think what's important to me is that we're meeting all the health and safety standards.
Fair enough. Joshua Hagmark is the Water Resources Manager at the City of Santa Barbara. Thanks again.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
This is KCRW. I'm Jonathan Bastian. Every other week, I'm joined by Matt Kettman from the Santa Barbara Independent. We discuss food and drink trends up and down the Central Coast. He writes for the Santa Barbara Independent and wine enthusiasts. Matt, good to see you.
Good to see you.
All right. We know there's good food in town. We know there's expensive food in town and there's some good tasting menus. But you've experienced something locally that's kind of taken this to a whole new level. What's it called? What is it?
So this is the Silver Bow, which is in the Montecito Inn. It's one of these new restaurants that's been opened by Philip Franklin Lee and his wife, Margarita Callis Lee. This is a multi-course menu for
$550. $550. Let's make sure we get that out there clearly.
It does cover your wine and your tip and even some drinking afterwards, but you know, it's $550.
Uh-huh.
I counted the courses that I got to eat there a couple weeks ago, and I just counted all the courses, and there was 23 different bits of food I got to eat. Some of them were full courses, some were more the amuse-bouche or the desserts, but there was 23 different things to eat, and they were all pretty phenomenal.
Yeah, I mean, if you get 10, 12 things, that's like an interesting night.
Right.
But what you're talking about is totally, totally out there. So what did you eat? I mean, what does that even comprise of?
Well, I mean, you got to look at it, the whole experience. It's not just even what you're eating. So I walk in and you go into this kind of midway room where you're presented with some of these foods that are sitting on rocks with this like metal tree in the middle. And then I don't want to ruin the whole surprise, but suddenly you're in front of this kitchen team, you know, and there's only 8 seats in this restaurant. Huh. And it's, you know, you're looking at the kitchen team. There's a kitchen right behind them, and they're about to cook everything for you. So they do some pretty phenomenal stuff. I can read a couple things.
Please do.
So the menu's broken into sea, land, and desserts, essentially. From the sea, we had the lightly grilled king crab in a sea urchin emulsion with gooseberries, sourdough breadcrumbs, and sauce vin. Venjun with caviar as well. So that's just one dish from the seafood menu.
Okay.
And then if we look at the venison loin from the land menu, we had it was roasted in brown butter with smoked chestnut puree, bluefoot mushrooms, Tokyo turnips, chanterelle, venison juice. And all these come with wines that are from around the world. You know, a lot of the food is local in origin or local in the people that source it. So there's a guy that brings in Wagyu beef from Japan that lives in Santa Barbara, apparently. And this Wagyu beef is finished on olives. And so the meat itself almost has this like oily consistency to it, which is just phenomenal. I was blown away. I've been lucky enough to eat a few meals like this in my life. Including at places like Manresa up in Los Gatos, which is one of the more famous restaurants in the country. And this was not only up there, I think it really surpassed you know, some of these best places I've eaten, which is saying a lot.
Yeah, that's a big statement. I mean, you try many wines per week, you eat at some of the best places, but this is one of the better ones you've ever had, maybe the best.
Yeah, I mean, and you got to look at it, you know, to be perfectly honest, I didn't pay the $550. I was hosted as media. I don't have that kind of money.
Right.
But if you got to look at it like it's not just eating food, and it's not just fine art, because every dish is an art piece in itself. And even the utensils are made by a particular metalsmith. But it's also kind of theater. There's a little dance going on behind the stage. And, you know, it's just a full, memorable experience. So if you're trying to spend money on food that you'll remember, this is a good bet if you have that kind of money.
All right. Silver Bow in Montecito. And Matt, it's kind of part of a larger story, which is how well Coast Village Road in Montecito is doing, especially, of course, after it was hit by the mudslide. A lot of things were closed, but there's a couple of pretty cool spots right now you could check out to go eat.
Yeah, I mean, Coast Village Road might be one of the more exciting places to hang out food-wise in California right now. I mean, you have Bettina, which is a wood-fired pizzeria with lots of Italian cocktails and stuff like that. You have Cow Kang, which is the Empty Bowl guys. They opened a new place on Coast Village Road, which is a sit-down Thai restaurant. You have Oliver's, which is, you know, really fancy vegan food. Then you have the classics that have been there for a long time, Sakana, Kava, you know, places like that. And then Philip Franklin Lee's The Monarch, which is right next door to Silver Bow, is also, you know, really exciting these days. So, I mean, if you're hungry, you could go ahead to Coast Village Road.
Yeah, and you had a lot of good options there. Matt Kettman from the Santa Barbara Independent and wine enthusiast, thanks as always.
My pleasure.
That's it for today. You've been listening to The 805 on KCRW in Santa Barbara. You can learn more about the show at kcrw.com/the805 or download the show wherever you get your podcasts. Today's show was produced by Carolina Starin. I'm Jonathan Bastian. We'll see you next week.